here we go again. Manly and Howell, Paris well ahead, but the gap starts now. Manly's coming back. Seems like the bill has here. How do you feel? Bump them, bump them, pick them up and dump them. Manly's coming back.
Yep, we got Manly and Pabra once again this weekend. It's preview time. Dag and Barney are back with you. Barney's overcome his obligatory technical difficulties and he's looking happy as Larry there in the bottom half of your screen. What's happening, my friend? Oh, wait. Rookie. Go on. Go again.
What have you done?
I left the music playing. Forgot you and the music are on the same stream because I'm a fucking rookie.
It was looking like I might have needed a backup computer or a telephone to get through tonight, but I've managed to work it out. So we're here again. My week's been technical difficulties, actually. A couple of breakdowns at work and shuffling stuff around. So, but what do you do?
It makes you feel better. My life's been technical difficulties. So here we are.
A good chunk of mine. It's probably gone that way as well. So.
Anyway, we're here. We're going to talk footy. And I'm a bit excited about this round because I think I've think I'm going to find a few winners, to be honest, more than anything, more I got stuck into this. But you can tell me I'm wrong. You wouldn't believe it. It's multicultural round over the last 2 weeks we've had. Just in time to save us all.
We'll probably see a few pretty decent pre-game shows, I would imagine.
I'm sure there'll be something. Yeah.
Some interesting entertainment coming our way.
What have you made of the form heading into this round?
Yeah, a little bit up and down. Obviously, there's five or six teams that have sort of stamped themselves as front runners at the moment. Whether they've actually won all their games or not, there's been some pretty good performances, even from, say, the Warriors, who've dropped both their matches. But, there's also, you can see the there's a bit of trouble bubbling underneath the surface for a few of these clubs as well, which we've seen with the team list that will come out this week. So.
Is this the most, in the time we've been doing a show anyway, most you've seen clubs jump at shadows?
Especially in the playmaker ranks, yeah, it is.
I was just thinking that's what I was setting up. Like, as I've said before on the show, we live in a world of it's quarterback land more than ever. And I guess it's... You live and die by your quarterback now.
Yeah, the issue these obviously we're talking about Newcastle and South here, but they've
at a lesser extent. Carry on. The other bloke there's Sullivan doesn't really count, and there's another one as well. But
I don't think they ever really sorted on what they were doing coming in out of a preseason, which is interesting as well. But you're now at the position where you've put in two new halves into the South and Newcastle lineups, and realistically, you can't now swap them back out for a month.
No.
You can't just go, oh, fuck, made a mistake, bring Elias back next week.
No.
But you need to give the guy, the Hawkins and Cogger now at least three or four games to prove their worth in that position, which is, I was surprised that they pulled the trigger that early on these two guys, to be honest.
Same. I agree. And we talked at length about Elias.
Elias has been coming for a while, let's be honest.
Yeah. But... And the longer... I think as well we're also in a land where pre-season doesn't count. I mean, off-season doesn't count. Like, Souths, I think, are looking at it from a four wins from the last 15 point of view rather than this is a new season point of view. But we've been talking about it for a while. Newcastle... They went and bought their shiny new toy, and Cogger's the flavour of the month. We'll see how long he gets. I don't know. I don't think their team's necessarily going to turn everything around because of him. I think him being there may help. I think...
The game plan has to change along with it, realistically.
Well, that's the thing, and I was thinking about this. When you sack your halfback in the second round, doesn't accountability at some point have to come back to your roster management, your coaching, and what the fuck you've been doing all summer?
Play style that you've been doing all preseason, 100% it does.
Like it's a little bit mind-boggling that if you haven't, wouldn't you have got to December and gone, oh, we're a month into preseason, this doesn't feel right? Or is it just everyone so far up their own ass that no one realises yet?
And this is something 4 or 5 weeks ago, if you did have question marks around what was going on, what's the problem with changing the sevens in the opposed training sessions?
Yeah.
And, give Cogger 2 or 3 weeks in training at halfback and see if there is a difference between what you're getting out of Hastings and Cogger or Hawkins or Ilias. But
And I don't think we look. We're about to get into a preview. I don't think Hastings has been bad by any means. I don't think he's been explosive.
No, definitely.
I think he's part, like I said, part of the shiny new toy syndrome, and part of the bloke's had two leg surgeries the last 2 years, and I don't think he's necessarily full of confidence in his running game.
No, 100%. But that, I don't think that's where they've been lacking, though, either.
Exactly right. I mean,
the
issue
is realistically he's been getting good, clean ball to go across the ruck and get onto the outside. And there's more than just him involved in that. So
100%. It's been a whirlwind 48 hours since you've done a show. Is anything you has caught your eye that you've wanted to talk about?
Oh, obviously, these two are the massive ones. You've now got the injury of Hask out coming out, looking at four weeks plus, which is going to be a massive one for our super coaches when we get into that chat. But that also really puts a dent in the middle of that Broncos pack, which I did question after the first round with some of the depth in that interchange. Is really going to be brought to the fore now. So.
It's very thin all of a sudden.
Looking that way. Obviously, you don't know who's going to perform and who's not, but, it's the depth is looking decidedly different now. So
definitely. Should we get into it then? If there's not a great deal else to discuss, there's been lots of crap
nothing
around.
Nothing jumped out at you, did it?
Oh, only the usual Latrell stuff, and that should have been fine. We've talked about that. I did like their answer to him swearing is to ban them filming radio stations filming things. If that's not a hitting the left knee and having the right leg kick reaction, I don't know what is, but sometimes the tail now wags the dog, I feel. But anyway, I did also enjoy, and I have not watched 360 a lot in the last couple of years, but the impassioned defence of Braith and Asta from Ilias the last few nights, without a mention that, you know, he manages the bloke. But anyway... Cool, man. You right there? 7 minutes without technical difficulty. You right? You back? All right. Technical difficulty solved. 7 minutes we made it in before something went wrong. But hey, here we go. Welcome to the
I
new
think
age.
That was Zoom. I don't think that was my problem.
All right. We'll blame Zoom on this occasion.
Let's blame Zoom on this occasion. All
right. Yeah.
But yeah, as you're saying, it paints, you know, an Aster into a pretty difficult corner. He has to come out and defend his client, obviously. Interesting where he goes to from here. I guess we won't see for a good month or so, but I'd imagine he comes back into this side unless Hawkins sets the world on fire.
Or they do just go to Cody and Whiten.
Correct.
That might be a weak way because we'll get there. Let's get there first, hey?
Yeah. All right.
Let's get there and let's look at our grand final rematch, which is PCTC is going all right. Thanks to everyone that signed up there. Tipping's going well. Do you have the stats in front of you? Probably not.
No, we hit about four or five blokes, hit a full round last week, which was interesting. Wow. It wasn't that hard to find, realistically, if you didn't go out of your way to tip the Warriors and the Dragons like we did. But
Chugging along, there's a couple of people on 15, 16 points, so they're doing well, much better than us. But we will check that out, PCTC Sports Tipping, all sorts of good stuff happening there. There's comps all year round.
Mug Tipper's leading the comp through round two on 13 points. He's part of the Footy and Frothies crew as well, so we've got a bit of a chase on there to grab him.
Hmm.
I think I'm on 9 and you're on 9 as well, or 8 or 9 between the two of us. So, yeah.
Happy birthday to Mug Tipper Senior Mick, whose birthday was today as well. Good man.
Yes, very good man.
After all that, let's waffle no more. Panthers and Broncos. Grand final rematch coming from Bluebet Thursday evening. So tonight, by the time most people see this, it's a cracker we've got for the Panthers. Unfortunately, all the big games two weeks ago, you could have been really frothing about this round, and didn't the shine come off very quickly with some injuries and some form slumps and all sorts of stuff. But anyway, yes. Grand final rematch here. We've got no Fisher Harris, so Lindsay Smith starts at prop. The bench for Penrith, Laurie, Eisenhuth, Henry and Garner again. Brisbane have lost Adam Reynolds, who's replaced by Jock Madden. Corey Jensen starts again. No Painhouse as mentioned. So Fletcher Baker will start. Piakora, Ricky, the back row. Smoothie, Hetherington, Tapau, and Willison is the new face into that team. And to be honest now, I think it's a bit hard to get too excited about the Broncos being much of a chance here. But am I wrong, Bart?
I don't think so. Penrith bench is looking a little bit light there too, to be honest. with some of those guys. Liam Henry, looking forward to seeing him come in and have a go. And the same with Xavier Willison. But Brisbane is going to have to come down and really play that. I think they're going to, even now more so with Payne Haas out and Reynolds out, I think the controlling game sort of goes out of the window. So they're just going to have to try to match this pack in the middle of the field and then really rely on some of these talented outside backs to score points and probably put points, quite a few points on early and make Penrith chase. I'm not sure if it happens, to be honest, although, you know, Cobbo can take a game away from somebody in the twinkling of an eye. Very hard to take a game away from this Penrith team. You saw it in the grand final, for instance, last year. So I expect Penrith to really rely on trying to control that middle and be quite controlling at the start of the match, keep it as tight as possible for the first half an hour. And then I dare say the second half of this game, you'll start seeing Penrith just slowly just edge away from this Broncos side. Whether it gets out to 13 plus, I expect it might, but it'd probably be late in the game with Penrith 13 plus. I think it's the first time I've tipped Cleary to be man of the match in this one. He's just been warming into the season nicely, and I think this game really sets up for him to take control, get hitting the back rowers and getting some nice passes out to these centres that can put some footwork on their opposition and put some points on. So Penrith 13 plus. I'm going to go with Liam Martin to score the first try and Cleary as man of the match.
And it is a cracking club. If you say the forward packs are all a little bit depleted, and the Penrith forward pack is what it is, Barfish Harris, I guess, but the clash of the centres is mouthwatering in and of itself, so hopefully we get to see some of that play out. Some of these games we've seen in the past, Stags go to his way to try and boss his opponent in the past, but here, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I'm going to tip Penrith 13+. I think Reynolds is a bigger loss than people are making a deal of. I think he started the season in fantastic form. I think he's been brilliant the first two games. And without that control, you're now putting the onus back on, and Jock Madden's a fine tradesman, but you're now putting the onus back on Ezra Mam, who hasn't, and it's a very interesting clash, actually, Mam and Luai, both 5'8", who haven't really started the season in any electric form.
Definitely not.
So that's my concern. I think the difference might be the back row for Penrith. I think Carrigan Yeo's at another fantastic clash, which we'll see all the way through Origin. But Sorensen Martin, big, big advantage to Penrith. And I'm going to go Penrith 13 plus. I think it's a late blowout, as you say. I think it might just be similar last week, even game, but then Edwards makes a break. All of a sudden the wingers and centres start really getting some open space, and they find two tries in the last 10 minutes. Scott Sorensen first try, though. I think we'll dig to 10 or 12 minutes in this game, and there'll be a bit of footwork from the back row that might open up the scoring. And I'm going to go with the obvious, not the obvious, but the in-form lock here. Isaiah Yeo started the season absolutely outstandingly, and I think that'll continue. And I'll give him man of the match here, or at least forecast him for that. Yeah, a thought on Luai and Mam?
Yeah, well, Mam's running game really hasn't come to the fore so much this year, considering it was one of his big attributes last year. His defence has been a lot stronger than probably previous years. It has actually been quite good. Maybe a kick in the backside and being told he has to take control of this team, you might see a bit more out of him coming into this match. And Luai generally, he's very similar. If he doesn't have to get too involved, he seems pretty happy just to play his part and just roll on with the machine. So unless Cleary's having a poor game, or they really find a mismatch on that left-hand edge with Sorensen and Luai, I think you probably see much the same out of Jerome.
Yeah. Now, Penrith have won 6 of the last 7 games, actually, between these two, and it's been a very long time. I think one in the last decade or so that Brisbane actually won at Bluebet. So some stats against them there. Friday night kicks off with a very interesting physical clash. The Wars hosting the Raiders from Christchurch, I believe.
Yes.
Where Wade Egan's been named. He's still possibly in doubt. Capel's been named, but I think he'll be okay. Harris DeVito will be on standby should Egan miss out. Apart from that, Warriors look pretty similar last week, and the Canberra Raiders look exactly similar last week. So, no, they don't. I tell a lie, because Elliot Whitehead's back, and a big change, given that Zach Hosking's been put back back to the bench, and super coaches everywhere have cried out in angst.
Right. I think Cable got through 80 minutes last week, didn't he? So,
yeah, I think he's fine. I don't think there'd be any issues there with him. Anyway, Egan's a big one.
Yeah, Hosking back to the bench is going to kill a few people. I dare say he still score fairly well, but
I think he still plays an hour.
I don't think you'd be seeing the hundreds out of him that you have done recently. Massive forward pack battle in this one, and it'll go a long way to being determinant on who gets the upper hand early in this game. Just the experience and the physicality out of this Warriors team. I think they've just got a slight edge there. You got Whitehead coming back, who you would hope he's at 100%, but who knows? Ricky does like to sort of stick with his older players and bring them back, even if they are a little bit underdone.
Interestingly, Horsburgh's available this week, and he's named in reserve grade. He's not even in the extended squad.
Maybe still carrying. Yeah, he might be a little less than 70% or something, which is interesting. Some really nice one-on-one matchups here with the centres. Popoate and Tomoko have been doing a lot of work for Canberra and been pivotal in some of the stuff they're doing, getting down the field. And Rocco Berry and Tuivasa-Sheck, not so much getting out of the bad end of play, but they're doing some very nice things in attack when they get down in that attacking sort of 30 or 40 metre zone, and have been really good with their hands on the ball. So there's some nice matchups there. I've got a funny feeling you might see a really good game out of Tuapiki in this one.
Okay.
I just think if the Warriors do get do really start to tire out that middle of the Raiders, you might see Tuapiki cutting back through the middle with a few offloads and change of angles, and you might just get a pretty good showing out of him in this game. So,
what we haven't seen for the Raiders yet, and this is to your point, that just their tired forward pack really be tested by those smaller bodies through the field. They haven't had that really exposed yet. So good shout on that one. The other one I didn't mention, Seb Chris, HIA last week, which has pushed Hopewide back into the centres, as you mentioned there. But I'm looking, this is a very interesting matchup. I'm looking for the Warriors to get on the board at home. I'm going to go with them 1-12. I'm going to say DWZ started the season in great form and will score first, able to just pull apart and maybe physical that edge with Savage there. They're very good at getting them stripped on the outside, so I'm going to go look towards that edge for the first try. And in a game that, let's say, doesn't on paper read full of flair, I'm going to say Luke Metcalf, fresh off his re-signing, has had a good start to the year without, as you said on Monday, a heap of Supercoach credit, but I think he can have a couple of try involvements. I'm going to make him man of the match in my forecast. How are you seeing this?
Yeah, I just think there's, the benches line up pretty well as well, but there's a little bit more probably ball playing coming in with some, with Dylan Walker just adds that little bit of extra ball playing in and around the ruck. And I think the Warriors will really target, especially for the first 20 minutes, the middle of the field against this Raiders team. Mm-hmm. And if they can then go to the edges, I think Sean Johnson might just really run some traffic at the halves for the Raiders. Fogarty and Strange aren't poor defenders by any means, but constant repeated efforts and then just, making decisions after a first half of just having forwards run at you for 40 minutes. There might be a few points there for the back rowers off the hip of Sean Johnson. So I'm going to go with him man of the match. And I agree with you, Dallin. He's been in superb form again, and given half a chance, he's probably the bloke who finishes the first try for the Warriors with a 1-12 margin.
We get to see the Bunnies in action Friday night, the main event from the air, from where are they, SFS?
Allianz,
that'd be it, where Jared Weir Hargraves finally plays his 300th game. Cam Murray plays his 150th game.
Oh, very
and,
good.
Yeah, so there's a couple of stats there. And as I said, Bunnies coming to this only won 4 of the last 15. I went and had a look. 2 of them were against the Dragons and 1 was against the Tigers, so even that stat looks
right. Yeah,
doesn't look great on paper. But for the Chooks, they've lost Luke Keary at the moment. Sander Smith's named at 6. Angus Crichton comes back onto the extended bench, which pushes Wong back to the reserves. And we also get Connor Watson back with Sandon starting. I was of the opinion they could do much worse than, especially against this defence that the Bunnies have been serving up, do much worse and move Marno to six and get Billy Smith onto the field. But this is the way they've gone, at least on paper for now. For Souths, as we mentioned, Dean Hawkins named at seven. Whether they do look at Whiten at six, who knows? And that's about the only real change. Jacob Host actually is into the back row at 12, which pushes Talis Duncan to the bench. Shaq Mitchell onto the extended reserves. The rest is what you see is what you get. Is there any hope here for Souths?
Mainly through the fact that the Roosters haven't really set the scoreboard on fire to start the season. I know they were pretty decent in Vegas, but there were some issues around what they were doing last week in that game. I think Sandon Smith provides a little bit more of a direct attack from a half who's going to probably take the line on a bit more, which we've seen from him in the limited times that he's been out there. He's not adverse to digging into the line and trying to take someone with him to provide options there. Souths just really need to up their work rate, to be honest, and just not fall off for those 15 or 20 minutes that they have done in the first couple of games. Host probably helps that. You know, Cook and Murray are going to do it. But Totola's capable of doing it, whether he's given enough minutes to do that, because they've got to get this rotation on. But I just think there's a fraction more X factor in the likes of Crichton and May coming off the bench. You know, Radley's going to be in for every...
When you talk work, some clubs in doubt, they default to work rate, and Terrell May and Crichton are going to come on and work their asses off. You know for a fact that's going to happen.
Absolutely, and they're really strong ball runners as well. So put in the right positions, fantastic. You've got your aggression in Rory Hargraves and Radley, and that just... I just lean that way, even though you're probably going to see a little bit of confusion in the halves, obviously with two young fellas coming in trying to take up a position there. That and whoever sort of comes out of that the best will be go a fair way to who wins this game. But I can't tip South at the moment. You've seen their outside backs being sort of turned inside out a few times. Whiten coming back in does help that a lot, but Cody Walker hasn't really added a great deal either. And if two or three of these outside backs for the Roosters catch fire, this could be a bit of bloodletting, realistically, at the back end of this match. I'm still going to stick to 1-12 just because a club under fire generally does come out and put on a better performance than what you've seen in the recent weeks. So I'm going to go Roosters 1-12. I'm going to go with Teddy, man of the match. He's been close to the best player on the field both games that he's played this year and really like what he's doing, straightening up that attack. I think Souths might start pretty fast in this game and really be trying to put some points on early. So I'm going to go with Latrell to score the first try for the South Sydney side.
It's a real big game for Cody Walker because all of a sudden his partner's gone. If they play the same way again, the proof will be in the pudding, because if he plays very poorly and it's not even questioned, well, there's bigger issues at home in the Rabbitohs club. I think I'm not going to dispute it. You said I'm going to go 13-plus Roosters. I can't tip South either. I think Kiri not being here is actually going to be advantageous to Sam Walker. I think he's in for a big game. Being the sole playmaker, I think Santa Smith's going to play more of a running role. And I think you'll see Tedesco, Manu both take plenty of turns at first receiver, especially given how much of a non-factor Manu was last week. That all being said, I agree with you. Teddy, man of the match. He's just in great, great form. And first try scorer, I'm going to go Satili Tupanua, who they'll isolate him just on whichever half's going to be in front of him, probably Cody. Get him isolated there one-on-one and steamroll over, and away go the Chooks.
Just on your Manu comment, would not surprise me if he comes out and has a man of a match performance either. We saw it in round one, and generally if he does have a bad game, the next game he plays is normally an 8 or 9 out of 10. So
100%. 3 p.m. Saturday, Dogs and the Titans meet at ANZ, where what's that?
I just said, oh, well.
Yeah.
could be anything.
It could be anything, which is correct. So Liam Knight has been recalled to first grade and could well start even money to be pop plan of the week this week. He's got the form on the board, but man, Hughes, Curran, Moran, the bench there. No Sexton still, no Sherry still. For the Titans, Jolliffe comes into 13. No Jojo Fifita, and Kieran Foran is back at six. He will help Cleese Haspo-Fomo in the back row. And the rest look pretty similar to what did in round one. This could indeed be anything. And we've said perhaps at the moment Bulldogs' best hope is touch footy. We saw about 15 minutes of touch footy from them start of last week's game when they looked dangerous. And I hope they go to that here because it gives them a real life hope of putting some points on this Titans team. After one game and a couple of trials, we don't really know what to expect from this Titans team. How are you sizing this all up?
Yeah, interesting game. Titans, I think, really need to use their power game. There's a distinct advantage just in the size of these two backs when you line them up. You know, it's just man to man, they are much bigger across that forward pack and even into them. If you go into the reserve bench as well, like they've just got players that are much larger in size. And if they can get that role in the middle of the field and control they need to dominate in the middle of the field, because what we saw out of them in the first game, they're gonna struggle to even keep up with the Bulldogs' amount of points that they score. And I think they've scored about 12 all season, haven't they?
So, yeah.
Four and in really does help. Everything on paper is telling me to tip the Titans, but after that round one performance, I can't. And the Dogs have had effort in, you know, two losing outings. I really like a few signs that I saw from Matt Burton last week, where he was very decisive in what he was doing. He wasn't sort of running around with the ball trying to find out what he was either running directly straight. He's made a decision as soon as he had the ball. It was either kick long or high, depending on the situation, or run or look for his like short man straight away. And he went to kick out quite a few times. It was quite effective. We mentioned the ball running there. And a lot of that came from Burton getting him in the positions to be one-on-one or sort of half between players and cause some problems there. And I think that might be a big part of the game plan here, to isolate kick out on a few of these younger forwards and cause some problems. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Kikau cross the line once, possibly twice, maybe Preston on the other side as well. And that'll come off the back of some short passing off Burton and Drew Hutchinson if they can get it right. Big thing that obviously the Dogs need to do is at least match the middle. If they can match the middle, whether it's through just not get run over more than anything, they could probably even lose a little bit. But I just think there's options here for the Dogs to score points, and we haven't seen it yet out of the Titans. So I'm going to go with exposed form, go the Dogs 1-12, Matt Burton man of the match, and kick our first try scorer.
I am going for the Dogs too. As I said, I think if they just be proactive in spreading the ball, as you said, and get the ball to these outside backs, they'll cause plenty of problems for Kelly and Co and Sammy out wide. And I'm going to go the same way. Connor Tracy first try scorer on the back of that left hand sweep. They've gone to it a few times in the trials. We've seen it via kick out, nearly via Crichton, etc. I think this is a game for it to come off and he can get over the line first. And I think as a result, in between kick out and Burton and them spreading the ball, I'm going to go Stephen Crichton, man of the match. Just being able to have some, really wanted to stamp it, his effort and being able to put some work and get in the face of Brian Kelly in defence, but also obviously in attack. All looks good for me. So going to go that way. Wouldn't be shocked if it all went to shit, but...
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that worries me is I think the Dogs need 20 points to win this game.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be...
I'm not sure if they get there.
A 28-24 sort of game. The Dragons host the Cowboys 5:30 from Jubilee, where they've won four of the last six, actually. So there's a stat for you. For the Dragons, they've lost Francis Molo through suspension. Connor Mulhausen comes onto the bench. Viliami Fifita also onto the bench. Jack DeBella and Laurie are the starting props. Jesse Marsh is hooker with a little HIA injured. Copped a knock, I think. And Hillam Lukey's out for the Cowboys. Nanai Finifuaki, the back row there. Granville Neame, McIntyre, and Jack Gazowski, my old mate, is onto the bench, the back sevener, as per program. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I can't possibly tip the Dragons off the diabolical effort last week, and I think our boys have started this season full of energy and haven't, and that energy hasn't quite clicked yet perfectly. They've got out of trouble last week, but once it does, I think there's points coming. I'm going to go 13 plus to the Cowboys. Really like to have seen their halves. Tom Dearden's running game has been fantastic both games. It can lead. I'm going to tip him out of the match. I think he's hit a sweet spot of form. Very interesting, Barn. I'll get your thoughts in a sec. How I think he's almost become chief playmaker here, and they've gone away from Drinkwater for a couple of weeks, whether that means the change is coming or whether it means it's a new style of play. We'll live and learn. And as you said, it hasn't necessarily suited him so far this year. First try scorer, Nanai, either off a kick or just barging straight over one of those lazy back rows, I think is a nice way to play this game. But what's your analysis?
Yeah, the I'd promised myself at the start of this year I wasn't going to tip the Dragons until they won two in a row, and then I went and fucking tipped them as soon as they won the first game.
Yeah, cost me a disaster class as well.
So, and it's cost me both times.
Yeah.
I can't tip the Dragons. Their power game is, like, obviously they won that first game on the back of a power running of their forwards and the outside backs. I don't think that... even if they're close to their best through, with the power game through the middle, I think the Cowboys have got enough to hold them in the middle, and it won't worry their outside backs at all. The likes of Val will just move to the side and cut them down around the legs to a lungy labor. They've got enough pace to, even if they do sort of half bust a tackle, you're going to see guys in cover shutting it down on the outside edges. And Lomax worries me, obviously, and Sloan. They're guys that can score points out of nothing. But I really think the Cowboys have got this one pretty well covered. Just like Manu, every time I've seen Val have an average game, the next game he plays is a 8, 9 or a 10 out of 10. So I'm expecting him to have a massive game in this one, and may just cause some absolute havoc out on that edge with Tuilagi. So... I'm going to go Val, man of the match. I'm going with the Cowboys 13 plus. I think after about half an hour in this game, you're going to see very similar to what you saw last week, especially if the Cowboys do have an edge in the forwards in that first half an hour of the game. I'm going to go with Felt first try scorer, though, because that's been their default option so far this year, is to get to that edge and try to get him one-on-one or outside of the winger
Well, it's been their default option for 188 tries, so...
Yeah. Exactly, but it's also so far this year it seems to be their first go-to option, and I think they might even get them pretty early in this game, put points on in the first 10 minutes. So Kyle Felt first try scorer, Val Holmes man of the match, and Cowboys 13 plus. You were asking around.
I did, and I guess the halves and Drinkwater.
Yeah, so as I mentioned on Monday, I think it. The Cowboys really need to get well over the advantage line before it becomes the Drinkwater show. Whereas when he's got time to run with the ball into the line before having to make a decision, it suits him a lot better than what it has been. And the Cowboys have not really dominated a forward tussle yet. They've been quite good in the middle, but they haven't been getting over the advantage line and really tearing down the middle of the field. And that's when you will see Drinkwater a little bit more. They seem a little similar to the Sharks, as they've gone out of their way to play a tougher style of football rather than relying on being able to shift the ball really quickly to an edge and score points. They're going out of their way to make it a physical tussle before that they break their opposition open. And that really suits Dean. He's been fantastic since being given the captaincy, but just the short stepping and the acceleration that he has around the ruck, that type of power game sort of suits. The power game and the grind in the middle of the field really suits the way that Dearden likes to play his football. You will see Drinkwater come into these clashes probably late in this game, actually. You might see him really open up the outside edges of this Dragons attack of the Dragons defense if they get their head down.
It's interesting thing about what you say about Sharks and Cowboys being conscious about it. I think if you're going to be a 26-round successful team, as Penrith and Melbourne and Brisbane, and to a lesser extent, have shown, you have to have a rock-solid foundation. The teams that jump out of nowhere for a year and knock a lot of – like Newcastle last year they're still foundations of sand. Like, you can play touch footy and get off your style for you, but once people work that out, it's very hard to maintain. And I think if you can have a solid base, you've got something to work from.
As you're saying, these teams that have been successful for year on year for a long, long time, when they're not playing their best, they still win these games.
Yeah.
And it's off the back of that foundation that they've set that, okay, we're not playing great, but we're just going to turn up more often than you are. We're just going to be physical for longer than you are. And we'll do everything that we'll scrap for 80 minutes if we have to and get away with it. So, it does lend itself to obviously a longer term performance over the year, but also you need a durable team to be able to do it as well. So, because it comes back to injuries and depth in your squad as well. So,
a lot of the talk around Lomax flat out not wanting to be there. I think it even came out today that he's on record as saying, no, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, Hunt came out and had some comments around it today.
Here's a late bold prediction. A Lomax for Clemmer trade in the next 12 months. There you go. I'll just put that on record so I can claim to be a genius down the road. Anyway, Tiger.
Something around Clemmer or?
No, not at all, I think. But Lomax wants to play centre. Tigers are desperate for centres. And it's not far up the road. And from all reports, they keep trying to offload Clemmer along the way. But let's just see how that pans out.
Fair
just
enough.
Just a thought I had. But let's get to the Tigers, who host the Sharks, who haven't won at Leichhardt Oval, where they'll be playing, in a decade.
A decade?
Yeah, 2014 is the last time they won at Leichhardt. Aiden Caesar has moved into the halfback role for Sullivan. Olam comes in for Stafford Taylor. He's going to miss a few months with his syndesmosis. Pole is named at 13, so the Seyfarth dream's over. And for the Sharks, they've just lost Nakura to suspension, so Jack Williams comes in the back row. Billy Burns onto the bench. No How Tapua. Not sure who summoned Billy Burns in front of him, but hey, here he is. Is there any hope here?
Just to shore up the back row there, mate, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Obviously, you got Jack Williams coming in to take Nakora's spot, yet to have shown that he's an 80-minute player in the back row. So I dare say Billy Burns will probably get some time on that right edge in place of Nakora and Jack Williams. But any hope
for the Tigers?
I can't see it, to be honest. Your forward pack, which was the thing that was getting you through, or keeping you competitive for a lot of games last year, was missing for a big part of last week. And if that happens again, this could be a complete blowout by the back end of this game. And your right edge defense last week was deplorable. And you've got Talakai and Mulatalo out there have been the only blokes who've scored tries for the Sharks recently. So that could end up being a bit of a massacre towards the back end of this game, to be honest. I've gone with Talakai man of the match. I just think he will be involved in everything with points being scored for the Sharks out there, whether he's scoring them himself or setting them up for Mulatalo. I'm going to go with Jack Williams, first try scorer. Obviously, no Nakora there. It's one of Nico's pet plays, is that little short ball on the right-hand edge for his back rower, whether he can run the same lines as Nakora has been, but wouldn't put it past him for first try scorer. And, yeah, I think the Sharks win comfortably at the back end of this game.
Yeah, not a lot of upside. Look, on paper, and we've learned, obviously, games don't get played on paper, but the forward battle should suit Sharks, but should suit the Tigers, but we haven't seen that in a very long time. So, that all being said, I'm not optimistic either. I'm going to go 1-12, only because I am, an internal optimist, Barn, despite my previous statement, but I can't tip the whole round 13+, so I had to roll a one in. Katoa first try score. He loves scoring against the Tigers. I think he's got a hat trick and did he get a four or something against him? Oh, he got three or four or five last year sometime.
And I think you might see that sweep play pulled out a couple of times in this one. I think they've been, obviously been laying the platform in the first two games. I think they might want to just give the outside backs a bit of practice.
Yeah, but our edge defense is diabolical. It's the worst in the comp. And even Justin Olam coming back, he's not going to save that. And I went Talakai man of the match too. I think he can own this. He can really bully him out there. He'll they'll just get – this will be one of those games which you haven't seen a lot of in the last 12 months, but they'll just get the ball to him for sake, getting the ball to him and
– yeah, get him early ball. First contact is going to be critical
and
on whoever's lining up on him.
And he'll just pop it to someone else and off will go Katoa or Kennedy or whoever's nearby. Yeah, let's move on. We get to CommBank, Sunday Arvo, where the Eels will be more than happy to get back to after losing the first couple. It's Regan Campbell-Gillard's 200th game. And Para have won 8 of the last 10 here and 3 of the last 4 against Manly. We've got, for Parramatta, Luca Moretti comes into 14, so the hooker is gone. And Joey Lussick, sole hooker there. Blaise Talangi makes his first grade debut in the centres. Harper goes to the wing. Sean Russell, the other winger there. Ray Vega is into the team for Talau, who is on an extended bench, so may come in if his legs are right. But for now, we're going to treat it as Ray Vega being here. And everything else is what you'd expect from Manly. I was really amped up for this game. And then once you get into it and you look, compare these back five, back four, Harper, Penasini, Tuolungi, Russell, to Vega, Cooler, Garrick, Paulo, Brooks, Trbojevic. It's, I think it's suddenly very scary for Parramatta. Thoughts, Barn?
Yeah, well, we've seen that the Eagles have made it their penchant to go to the edges early in both games this year, really test out those edges. There's massive question marks around Harper's defence out on an edge there. You've got a new fella that I
don't know.
I'll be honest, I know nothing about Blaise Talagi. He's got a first grade debut,
yeah,
so he's obviously a much better footballer than anything I ever produced in my life. But Parramatta's big hope is to really dominate the middle of the field, make this a big physical battle through the middle of the field. And there is some hope there that they, you know, their forwards could boss the Manly pack in the middle of the field. And if they can get on the front foot and dominate field position through some kicking out of Moses and Dylan Brown and these big guys really running strong, hard lines on the edges and through the middle of the field, they can get away with this game. And they definitely, it's not a cut and dried situation in this game. I've just got a feeling that you are going to see the ball getting out to Brooks and these two centers in Garrick and Cooler, who one's got size, pretty decent pace, and the other one's just got absolute speed to burn. And if you can get them in a one-on-one with their opposition, they could win that battle 75% of the time. And if that's happening with the wingers in support, Tommy in support, Brooks wrapping around in support as well, you could see some line breaks and inside passes and offloads to score some points. I think it'll be a pretty high score. I think you're going to see somewhere around the 30 mark or high 20s from both of these sides. I've got Manly winning 1-12. I think DCE may have to kick off the back foot a fair bit, and you're going to see some of those really beautiful long kicks that you see, maybe a 40-20 to change a bit of momentum and pin Parramatta back down the other end of the field. That'll get him the man of the match. And I'm going to go with Tommy to score the first try. I can just see a bit of work between maybe Ben Trbojevic, Brooks, and then Turbo chiming in that spot on that left edge and coming up with first points.
It's funny because a week ago we said the same thing about this Manly pack against Easts, and I think they owned them. They more than held their own. And if they repeat that, they'll piss in here, Manly. I went on record and said they're the best team I thought on the park all last round. You've summed it up really well. Parra's only hope is to stay centered here and try and bash them out of the game. If they can win that battle, that's their best hope of winning this. It'll bring Brown and Gutho into the game. But I'm sticking with Manly. I just think there's too many points for them to score, beating up those outside backs. And go man of the match. I know 1-12 Manly, just because CommBank Sunday, Eels going to be up for it. But Tommy Turbo's working this season really well. He's probably flying on the radar just because he's so good. And he'll have a field day here, beating up some of these with Brooks on one side and Cooler on the other. First try, Ray Vega. We know how often people can waltz over untouched against Parramatta on the wing, and he'll be the next one to do it.
If Mitchell Moses wasn't carrying an injury,
yeah,
I would be more keyed up to tip Parramatta because this sort of game does suit Mitchell Moses.
Fast track, yeah, fast track, flee from.
Fast track, yeah. attacking the opposition halves and centres, being able to, because they're not the strongest defending centres in the world either from this Manly side. Paulo's got question marks around him as well. Vega kicking in behind him can be an option as well. He's one of those guys that doesn't really turn as well as some of the wingers in the competition. But for mine, he's been floating in and out of games and really only putting in sort of 20 minutes, half an hour. And I think the pain's just getting too much for him. So I don't know what he's carrying. It seems like it's a groin or something along those lines. And yeah, if he was 100%, I probably would be tipping Parramatta in this game. But
yeah, I have no insight to what's going on with him, but it almost starts to feel like this is probably one of those things that he carries for 6 weeks and then has surgery anyway, or has 3 weeks off anyway.
Quite possibly, maybe yeah. Or they give him a month off.
Yeah. But, we'll see how that pans out. We wrap up with the Knights hosting the Storm at 6:15 Sunday evening. Storm have won 11 of the last 12 against the Knights, but obviously Newcastle had that great record at home last year. For Newcastle, yeah, Gamble and Cogger are the new halves. No Mazu, off for surgery, which means that they now get it. And this is probably a forgotten thing given how average Newcastle forwards have been in the last couple of weeks. No Dom Young, now no Mazu. They've got Tuala and Jenkins on the wing. That is a lot of hard yards that aren't.
This is a good 200 metres that they're going to have to find.
Yeah,
plus,
that they have to now find coming out the back. And I think that's a big issue. Anyway, for Kai Pierce-Paul starts. Any other? Jaden Brayley, 14, is taking up that Hastings spot. Pappenhausen is still at one. Failongo's injured. I suspect had Failongo been fit, we would have seen Pappy at 6 and Pezzett at 7. But we've got Tyron Wishart at 7 now. What else we got? Kane Bradley on the bench, Moroa, Lewis. No Christian Walsh. Kame Kamika and Josh King are the starting props. I thought about this more, and the extension of why I raised those wingers is I just think the Melbourne forwards are going to outwork this Newcastle pack. Both Saifidi brothers at times these first 2 weeks look like they're hanging on by a string at times in games.
Yep.
The Kai Pierce-Paul still getting his feet on the table. Apart from Frizzell and Elliott, I haven't seen anything really excited about from these Newcastle forwards, and the Melbourne forwards have been really good. Their work rate is going to own what anything Newcastle can put out, and despite missing their halves, I still think Melbourne are going to easily do the job here. I'm going to say 1-12 just because they don't have a Hughes or a Munster, but go that way. I think it's a game for Harry Grant to take ownership coming in here, playing Phoenix Crosland on a front foot port with a front foot forward pack. Sets up beautifully for him to be man of the match. And he finished the last 8 seconds of last week's game with a try. I think he's going to open with a try here against Tom Jenkins on the wing there. Xavier Coates can open a scoring. Fairly confident Melbourne will get the job done, and you can get evens, which looks a great bet to me.
I'm just really worried about the 7 and the 6, to be honest. I haven't really seen anything out of Wishart as a 7. Pezzett's fine. He's been doing a very good job there.
I think he's better than fine, but yeah. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. It's probably stamped his name on one game, but still a young, career in development. I think the Saifidi boys would basically be read the right act coming into this game, that they've been nowhere near as good enough. And this is an opportunity for them. If they do play at their best, they can take on this Melbourne pack. Phoenix will work his backside out. Thompson's been fantastic as a front rower. Throw in Frizzell and Elliott that you mentioned. I think they can match this this Melbourne pack in the middle. And I really like Best and Gagai. Ponga's been down for 2 weeks. You're not going to hold him down forever. And I just think he might get involved with Cogger being a little bit more direct in and around the halves. And the plan will be to get early ball to Ponga. And then what he does with it, if he can provide some ball for Best and Gagai in good positions, they may be able to get around the likes of Remy Smith and Nick Meaney to score some points. So I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to go Knights 1-12. I think they just might have an extra try or two in them at the back end of this game because they're going to be making an absolute point of getting the ball to Kalen Ponga in this match, which will, for mine, he'll be involved in every try that they score and will be man of the match. I'm going to go Bradman Best first try scorer and Newcastle 1-12.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on all my tips. I'm actually going to play the Joker around this week. I think I'm on the right track. So very let's good. See how we go. What, you know, quickly to Supercoach next. Well, yeah, we're sure. going to start there. Are we going to read break-even stuff or just touch on a few key points?
Well, what are we looking at, really? This is round three. This is the money, the money makers that we're looking at coming into this.
Yep.
Into now, so it's probably is the way to really look at it. So
well, very quickly, I'll just touch on touch on the cash cows for position, hey, and get some thoughts. Start with the hookers. First of all, I see people are freaking out about Harry Grant. Are they on the wrong track there?
Same thing I'll say about everyone. If you bought him to be a keeper for the entire season, doesn't matter how much money they lose in the first 6 to 10 rounds. It's how many points they're going to produce for you by the round 27. So I'm holding. There's 5 or 6 blokes in my team that look to be losing 50K plus in the coming into this round three, but I'm not moving them on. They were picked in my side to be there at the end of the season, so they're staying there until I'm given an absolute reason. But you know, once they start getting into the 100K territory or injury or suspension, then yeah, possibly. But not at the moment.
Yeah, not even. Harry's going to lose 35K on projections this week, but he's playing Newcastle, like I said, with Phoenix Crossland. He's only going to meet Brisbane without Haas or Reynolds. He's going to have Bulldogs, Roosters, Bunnies, Gold Coast. No need at all to panic there. Or just quickly, obviously, if you've got your Lussicks or Levi's, you're sitting pretty, making money. Yep. And Little and Havili both on target to make 30 or 40 grand each. In terms of the other way, Brendan Hands, Tom Starling, you know, not looking good for them. Front row, everyone's front row is an absolute mess.
Well, just on the hookers, sorry, mate. If you are in trouble next week and you have, say, Harry does lose a fair chunk of cash or gets injured or something, you still got Appy another week away and a break even of mid 20s. You would imagine he's going to be pushing out minimum 60s. So there's some money to be made on the back of Appy.
And if you want the cash week grab, after. Lussick and Levi just look obvious, don't they?
Oh, 100%. They don't. They just have to take the field to make money this week. So
I'm freaking about Egan. I've held him. We'll see what happens. Unfortunately, he just has not had the best of luck. But as you said, Appy's up my sleeve there. Front row, everyone's in tatters. No Payne Haas. Buys for Flegler. All sorts. No Fisher Harris. It's all happening here. Just on projected changes. Terrell May, everyone's favourite player now. 65,000 projected. Moali, 43. Jensen, who we mentioned last week. Yes, we'll make money. And now is a job to do. So this is the week. If you do want someone, I think Corey Jensen looks very likely. The other end of the scale, Walsh is going to lose money. But Tom Burgess, Fisher Harris, 30 grand. Firm was silly. Everyone that snaffled him up for 230 is going to drop about 30 grand on that.
What's the talk around the injury for Fisher Harris?
Don't know. No serious damage. Pain management. So could be a week, could be a couple. There are obviously
possibly low scores if he does come back.
They're obviously not going to risk him. 440 Leota could interest me because he's obviously now the be all and end all. So I think pushes towards 500 there. Did anyone else catch your eye?
There's a few mid-rangers in the likes of guys that have started with Tamalolo is probably now looking to – he's going to drop a little bit of cash. The only reason you might keep him is he's a jewel to switch around second row, front row. Some of these big money guys are going to drop money. It's all dependent on whether you planned on keeping him for the entire season, obviously. Liam Henry is a cheap one from Penrith if you're looking just to go sideways or a downgrade is someone that you might want to pick up. -3 break even at the moment.
And Papali interests me, even though he could end up off the bench. I think he's still going to churn out 40, 50 and he's origin proof now.
And yeah, Leo Thompson, he's averaging 60, break even of 30. Probably not going to make a huge amount of money, but a front rower that's averaging, you know, 50 to 60 is someone that you probably wouldn't mind locking into your side at, what's he at, 450?
Zach,
but Moali's another big one. I think you'll see a lot of people go there this week just for the price. You know, it's what, 60K above base price. Looking like he'll probably bump up 100K over the next 3 weeks, maybe more. And, if you've got a bloke who's not playing or an underperforming front rower, if you're not going May, you're going Moali.
Back row, we've got Zach Hosking making 114K, being benched. Everyone's freaking out. I feel it's a little bit, well, obviously you wouldn't sell him now. He's about to make 115K. But I feel it's a little bit jumping at Shadows. I think he still gets his 55, 60 minutes in that team. Nanai's going to make 65-ish. Elliot, 50-ish. Curran, 50-ish. Morgan Smithies, 45. Ben Turbo, around the same. Joe Chan, around the same. So,
Hosking average of 100, obviously, that's, you're getting looking around the $1 million mark. So he's not going to obviously keep the 100 average, but if he's averaging 60 for the next 4 or 5 weeks, he's looking at getting up near 650, 700. So there's 150, 200 grand that you're likely to bank, and then obviously dependent on minutes, whether you keep him or move somewhere else. Ben Jovojevic is the big one. I think he's owned by about 80% of everyone. So the dual position is fantastic there as well.
Absolutely.
Joe Chan's one that's jumped out of the ground as a good bottom price second rower. And if you're looking for someone to fill that position, it's probably between him or Morgan Smithies. But at that lower price, you'd probably be jumping on Joe Chan. As a keeper, someone, Nanai at 580 with the break even of 17.
Peak 2022, didn't he get? He got close to 750 or something, didn't he?
He's averaging 75 at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's pricing him at around the $750 to $800 mark, and that they're keeper stats. So if you can grab a keeper at 580 at this time of the season, and obviously injury and suspension goes your way for the rest of the year, I'd be doing that.
I got Jack Bird wrong. He's going to lose about 35K. Nicora is going to lose 50. Corey Waddell is going to lose about 70. For the sense of completion there. Halfbacks, well, no one's got going yet, so very hard to say much. Is it freak-out time for any of these? Is it captain time for any of these? Very quickly, Townsend's making 50K. Luke Brooks is going to make about 40. Fogarty is going to make about 20, who are the two that I suggested going right back to our back deck show were the nice pods. So nice to get something right. Which way, is there anything here, Barn, to talk about, or is it time now to pull a trigger on just Captain Cleary and Nico this week and reap the rewards? 100%.
Well, your Fogarty price change is probably going to get him to about where he's going to stay for the rest of the season, so there won't be much change after that. Brooks could possibly push his way up to...
If he's not your 580, I think he's now a genuine second option.
Yeah, and averaging 70, prices him at around 700 grand, so... obviously, if he keeps pushing out stats in and around that 60 to 70 mark, there's 150 grand to be made on him. And I don't even know if you change him at the moment. If he's playing both sides of the football like he is in that Manly side, then there's probably every reason to keep him, even if you keep him as your second 5'8", dependent on who hits form later on during the year. Moses for mine is one that you probably have to sell. Carrying an injury... break-even of 130. He was only, for mine, I had him in my team. Obviously, he was the cheaper option out of one of these other two halves. It was a 200 grand downgrade and hope that he didn't come back to bite me on the backside. And now with the break-even of 130, I've had to drop him. And I can only see him going down for the next couple of weeks. And if he bottoms out at around 500 grand, you've lost 200 grand. Trying to get out of a cheaper option of starting with these two top guys. If you have one or both of those halfbacks, you just have to wear those price drops now for the rest until they either hit form or something dramatically changes in the season, because your only other real options are Johnson, who's at 800 grand anyway, and he's in the similar ballpark with your break evens, and it's not. It was. We said it from the start. There's not a lot of other options in the halfback.
Unfortunately,
position,
so. I
Jerome Hughes maybe in a couple of weeks, but he's still priced at 720 and he's averaging just under what he's priced at.
Unfortunately, I went with Sam Walker, so I'm going to actually grit my teeth and hold him.
Right.
Just because we'll just see what he does without Kiri there and against a see if he can get me a score to get me out of trouble, but it's not much better than the Moses situation, is it, realistically?
Realistically, no, not at all. And all these top guys were probably, well, it's shown though, all the top halves were overpriced to start with and none of them have come out firing. You've got a couple of nice scores out of those top two guys last week in Hines and Cleary, both going over 70. You know there's 100 around the corner somewhere, so I'd be holding them and captaining them, vice-captaining them most weeks, depending on who they're up against.
5'8", Metcalf's going to make 45K. Strange, 45. Brooks, 37-ish. Flanagan, about 30. Dearden, about 25. On the other end of the spectrum, Ezra's going to lose 56. Luai's going to lose 55. Burton, about 40. Again, what you see is what you get. The pool's empty. Luke Brooks, realistically, your best option. And going back to my bold prediction show, I did predict he would be the most owned 5'8 at some point. He's up to about 40% ownership. The only one higher at the moment is Ethan Strange. And once everyone cashes in on him, the bold prediction shows might be done and dusted.
Pretty much. Metcalf's priced at a point where there's 150 grand in him probably.
Yep.
If he keeps that position and plays well, which he has been doing. Max Plath's probably about the same. There's probably about 150 grand in him as well. And the fact that they're on the bye this week gives you an extra week to, you know, if you do drop a small amount of cash and then the break-even's massive the week after, you could go to someone like Plath or Galvin. Those two guys, obviously, very low break-evens. Galvin looks... I don't see him losing his spot now for a while.
No.
Plath coming off the bench, playing in the middle of the field, should be averaging 40 to 50 with a break-even of 17. So there's probably 100, 150 grand in both of those guys, maybe even more out of Galvin, depending on how, you know, how the Tigers actually go in attack. So they're guys that you can pick up in the next couple of weeks. And what we saw out of Katoa was brilliant last week. So if he puts back-to-back performances like that, you may see a lot of people jump that way as well. But obviously he's got to buy again as well. So any changes in the 5'8s, unless you're jumping on Metcalf this week, it's the week later or a couple of weeks after that. So,
well, now the two dangers to my bold prediction are Metcalf at the price right now. And Tom Dearden, just playing so well, he might become irresistible if he keeps going down that path.
Yeah, 100%. Averaging 60s, again, a little bit of money there to be made. But if you can get a 5'8 that's going to average you 60 for the entire season, he's someone that's worth buying and keeping in your side, isn't he?
100%. Centers, Mulatalo is going to make 100K this week. I was actually giving him some serious thought this afternoon. Talakai 57, Savage 50, Tuopiki 50, Tungo 50, Labour the same. Ethan Strange, who's a jewel, we've talked about, but about 45. Katoa 42, Ben Turbo 40-ish as well. Taylor May 35, Cole Felt 36. And in terms of losses, Tass is going to drop 70. Again, this is all on protections. Obviously, if they come out and do well, different story. 2-0. Going to drop 48, but obviously a natural keeper. Marzu injured 44. Look, I don't have a lot outside the obvious here. I think Cobbo's ready to explode, but maybe one more week. And he's going to make about 20K. So he's looking about 620. Still reasonable for a gun. And there's an absolute cash grab to be had on Fatape, who's going to get his... He's going to get some decent football, looks like. So he's a base centre. You can cash in if you really want to, if you've got something wrong, and start again. But I don't have a lot to add on this section.
Yeah, again, you've probably got another... You obviously got another week there on the Tigers players. But the likes of Crichton, until you see otherwise, I think you have to... If you've got him in your side, you need to drop him now, because there's a good chance that he's going to drop 100, 150K. Throw Simonson and Best probably into that as well. Until they show you otherwise. I'll chuck in, you got Rava in there as well. So there's, you know, what, four out of the top six or seven blokes there that I think really need to probably be dropped, because if you're holding guys at 600 and they end up coming out at 500 or lower, then it's really going to hurt your side unless they start putting together back-to-back hundreds, which is not likely at the moment, which we've seen out of the attack from the Dogs and Newcastle. Newcastle, obviously, a better chance of it happening than Crichton. But, the lower end, I think everyone's got most of the cheapies, Trbojevic, Strange. The good thing about Mulitalo and Talakai, they've got very good base stats. Yeah. So I know they've been a bit flattered to start the season. They've been involved in all the points from the Sharks, tries and assists. But both of those guys generally average somewhere around the 50 in base stats. So even if they just pump out bases for the next couple of weeks, they're still going to be increasing in price. I don't think they'll get away from you too much unless, obviously, Mulitalo scores a hat-trick this weekend, then you're probably not going to be able to get him for less than 750 the week after. So
yeah,
if you want him, you probably got to grab him now. Talakai, you might have another week or two if he really is interesting you to get in there. And Targo as well. I think if you want him, you probably have to get him now. Because he's getting past the point of over 700K. It's really hard to find money to get up into that kind of position to get those guys. So.
And fullback, Tyrell Sloan on target to make 55, Savage 50, Torpeke 50, Teddy 40, Pappy 35, Blake Tuff 40. Happy with our preseason where I suggested at least Teddy and Pappy are the budget options to go.
Yeah, and if you have both of them, you'd be absolutely killing it.
I should have just done that instead of changing my mind to Gutho and Teddy. But anyway, different story. We have, and in terms of losses, just quickly, Ponga's about to drop 80, 43 Drinkwater, Gutho 40, Kennedy 36. Just get your thoughts on the losses there. The big one's probably Ponga. Is it freak-out time, sell time? What are we doing?
Even if he drops 80K, you're still not far away from getting any other fullback, realistically.
Yeah.
So if you're in a point where there's another trade that's just as crucial somewhere else, you could probably take that 80K hit and you can jump off and go somewhere else next week. Because Trbojevic is losing money as well. Drinkwater's losing money. So they're probably all going to come out in and around the wash of, you know, high 700s, low 800s next week anyway. So you can do a sideways trade after dropping that 80K. I know it's not ideal, but or you can still even downgrade. You can downgrade to
anyone.
Pappenhausen. You know what I mean? Like he's what? What is he? 560 or something? You get to high 600s, and then you're still going to have 100K left over after you swap back out to Brimson. Everyone's losing money in their fullback position because if you didn't start with one of these guns at the start of the year, unless you started as you mentioned, unless you started with say Tuopiki and Tedesco or Tedesco and Pappenhausen, then everyone's in the same boat. So if you really need to strengthen up a different position in your team, I'd be telling you to take the hit this week and then look at next week before you start making changes at fullback.
The thing with Ponga is you can, if you were to sell this week, you can downgrade and almost look at getting him back in a few weeks because through Melbourne. Once you get through Melbourne, New Zealand, he hits St. George, Roosters, Bulldogs, and then you head towards Origin where you know heading to Origin he's going to grow a leg. So you could almost pick and flick if you wanted to.
I'm probably just saying more.
If you were to just save the trade and just...
I'd use it as a luxury trade.
But it's a very nice luxury trade.
Somewhere else,
yeah.
You go somewhere else.
It's a lovely luxury trade. If you put it this way, if you're thinking about it, do it this round, is what I'm my.
Yeah. If you don't have critical trades to be made elsewhere in your team, do it this week.
Yeah.
But if you're worried about the cash drop, most other of these top guys are going to be in the same position anyway. So it's probably not going to hurt you as much as you think it is.
Thinking Drinkwater, same story.
Yeah.
100%. Gutho is interesting because, you know,
if any of those guys come out and put 100 plus on this week, that projected and the cash drop is completely different. And a 20K, 30K drop in price is nothing.
These cash drops are based off a 2-game sample.
Yeah.
Gutho is interesting, but does now hit Sunday, Arvo, Manly, then the Tigers, Canberra, Cowboys, Dolphins, Manly again. A lot of those daytimes, he can get his get back on track very quickly. I think he's playing. I think he's playing really good footy. He just doesn't have the chance to do so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He just hasn't been the like he's running at his base at the moment, which is what average of 50.
Yeah. Yep.
Soon as the attacking stats get involved, that shoots up above 70.
Yep.
Yeah, they're all losing money, so I don't think you need to be jumping at shadows too much at fullback at the moment, to be honest, because you're still going to be able to go sideways or even a slight downgrade somewhere else.
Put it this way, I just think fullback's at least my problem. So
there's no one that's really going to hurt you that much unless you really want to get on Pappy or Teddy and ride that cash out. But even if you don't change it for the rest of the season, it doesn't matter how much cash they make.
100%.
It's about what points you get. So.
Exactly. Any final thoughts on Supercoach?
Yeah, what a confusing start of the season this has been. If you got your if you got most of your cheapies right at the start of the year, well done to you. But yeah, my biggest one would be don't be panicking about an 800 grand player losing. You know, if they're losing 20% of their value, yeah. But if it's 10% or less, it's not as bad as you probably think it is. Because there's a reason they're priced at that point.
I would also suggest...
as long as they're not missing limbs.
If you think
or...
Dropshit Creek, from everyone I've spoken to, 95% of people feel the same way. So it's been a rough year. That the number one draft curse has struck again, and I guess it's where everything is headed soon once it all plays out. Let's wrap up with our punting disaster class, Barn.
Let's do that. Both dropped money again last week, unfortunately.
Yeah,
two swings, two misses. What do you do? Minus $200 for the pair of us. I've gone a little tighter this week again for my better bet of the weekend. I'm going to go Cowboys and Cronulla, 13 plus.
Okay.
$4.50. You can get $4.50 for that. I'm going to have $70 on it. So
cool.
Return of hopefully somewhere around the 280 mark. $300.
My base one's going to be the Chooks minus 2.5. Manly head-to-head. Storm head-to-head.
Roosters minus 2.5.
Yeah.
Manly and Storm. Yeah.
That's $8. I'm going to put $50 on that. We'll go next to my first all-up, and I'm going to go the Sunday Arvo game where points will be scored, and have a $25 all-up on Luke Brooks and Tommy Turbo to both score any time. That's $11. Where are you heading next?
About $11. Nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll go with my... I'm going to go with the Roosters minus the 2.5 as well. And in the same game multi with this one, I'm going to have both fullbacks to score as well. So Roosters to win by more than 2.5 points. Latrell and Teddy to score. I'm going to have $20 on that at $13.75.
Very nice. And you got one more for us?
I've basically included every other game I haven't had a bet on, except for, I think, the Bulldogs game. I've gone a four player anytime try scorer multi. So I've gone Taylor May, Tom Trbojevic, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, and Bradman Best all to score in their games. $42.70.
Nice.
$10 on that.
I'm going to go to my last 25 on Harry Grant to score. I was going to go anytime. But I'm going to go to score, this is with a few outlets, to score first, second, or third try, $7.
First, second, or third.
Yeah, Daniel's showing for a first try, but I think he's going to cross the line here.
Yep.
Against Newcastle, and it'll be that typical dive over the line, the two Saif Bree brothers under the post look at each other like, I can't believe
you
did that again.
Yep. Well, you were meant to tackle
him. Yep. We've seen it plenty of times from Newcastle. And I think Harry's in for a try one of those first three. So let's go with that and get on the board. What's got you frothing?
The Canberra and Warriors forward pack battle for mine. I love myself a good tussle in the middle of the field. And I don't think you'll see a better forward pack matchup than this one to start. Canberra have been flying. They've got the some energy in behind them. Warriors do it. Sort of getting to that point where they really need to kill here. And I think both of these teams are going to make sure that they're trying to win the middle of the field, because that's the biggest outlet for both of these teams to win this match. So that first half in that game, I think we'll see a tremendous battle between the forwards.
I'm going to go to Sunday Arvo. I like the Eels and Seagulls matchup. I think there's going to be plenty of points. I think we should get a dry track. The predicted torrential downpour never came today, and I don't think there's much else around. Eels at home, Seagulls flying. It just has all the recipe for a very entertaining game of footy. So let's go towards that. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Fun Sunday afternoon outing. And we'll wrap it up there. I want to thank everyone for listening and tuning in again. All the feedback we've received, subscribed. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on YouTube, all that stuff. Check out rugbyleaguemerch.com for the shirts that are up there at the moment. And, Barn, I will see you potentially over the weekend, but we'll talk to everyone next Monday, if not. See you guys.
Yeah, get in the comments section.
Do that.
Be nice. Be nasty. Let us have it.
Bye-bye.
Good night.